each year. National Equal Pay Day reflects how far into the current year women must work to match what men earned in the previous year. Due to a gender gap in pay, it takes women an extra 3 months of wages to make up the difference. On average, women working full-time and year-round are paid 82 cents for every dollar paid to a man who works full-time and year-round. The wage gap is even greater for most women of color. Join host Chris Kingston Barker as she speaks with guests from the San Luis County branches of the American Association of University of Women, AAUW. Linda Barker, President AAUW Atascadero, Lynn Janeway, President AAUW San Luis Obispo, and Dr. Susan Opava, AAUW Five Cities Pismo Beach, about the work they do fighting to remove the barriers and biases that stand in the way of gender equity and to create a more economically secure world for women and girls, as well as what we can do as a community to close the gender pay gap. You're invited to listen, learn, and participate in the conversation today. Call in and be part of the discussion at 805-549-8855 or email your questions to voices at kcbx.org. The show addresses the many ramifications of change and how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community. And as always, if you miss a show, shows are recorded and archived on KCBX's website or listen to them on iTunes. Central Coast Voices is sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities in collaboration with KCBX and made possible through underwriting by Joan Gillard Sargent. Over to you, Chris.
Thanks a lot, Brad. And thank you, Linda, Lynn, and Susan for joining me today. And I would love to start with a little bit of history about what is the American Association of University for Women, and when did it begin, and what kind of work is it doing? And Linda, I'll go to you.
We've been a longstanding organization. It began in 1881 at a time when it wasn't usual for women to get four-year college degrees. So it was formed as a kind of a mutual support group by women who had college degrees in order to support women's higher education and their professional development. And it started moving into advocacy, political advocacy, as part of the women's suffrage movement. And now the main things that the national stands for is removing bias from education and promoting educational attainment for women, fighting for women's economic security, which includes fair pay and other forms of economic equity, advancing women in leadership. And at the national level, they give fellowships and grants. They have political advocacy. They do research papers. One of the recent ones, for example, was the difference in pay between men and women university professors. So even at the highest level, sometimes there is that difference. Locally, there are five branches in San Luis County of the AAUW, and three of those branches are here. I'm in Atascadero. Lynn is in San Luis Obispo, and Susan is in Pismo Beach, Five Cities. There's also a Morro Bay chapter and a Paso Robles branch. And we have various projects locally. We send girls, eighth grade girls, to a math, science, technology, and engineering camp for a week during the summer. We all offer scholarships for women going to college and in coming from high school or returning to work. And then we have various other local projects also.
Fantastic. And, you know, there was mention about Brad was doing an intro and was talking about the 82 cents for every dollar. And yesterday was the day that really was specified, that it was up until that day this year that it took women to catch up with what the average men men's income was in the 12 months of last year. So it took another 3 months because of the difference in the pay. And Susan, can you address the inequity in pay and how that, those numbers kind of come up? How is that determined?
So that begins by determining what the average income in a year is for all men. So just figure out what that figure is. And that becomes the 100% mark. So Then what's calculated is what various groups of women are earning in comparison to the men. So there was a new statistic added this year that included Asian women, which I think is very interesting. I'll explain that in a moment.
Yeah.
But men in general have an average income in the United States of $55,600 a year. Now, that isn't really a lot of money considering all the billionaires that we have in this country.
And that's throwing their income into this as well.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So that means that there are an awful lot of men earning pretty low incomes as well. So we don't want to vilify men for being rich and women are not. Because that's not the case. Now, it turns out that Asian women earn almost as much income as men. They're only 97% of the income of men. So that's pretty close. And I believe that the reason for that is that many Asian women and men are very well educated in technology, digital things. And these are probably women who have moved to the United States on work visas and are employed in technology companies. So their incomes would be fairly high anyway. But even so, note that there is a difference. They are not making as much as men in those companies. The next group is Black women, and they only make 66% of the income of men in the country. And that is only $36,700 a year. So that's quite a dip from the average salary for men. I skipped white women. White women are the next after the Asians. They make 80% of the average man and earn $44,600 a year. Then again was the Black women at $36,700 a year. But the lowest group by far is Hispanic women, and they earn only 58% of the income of men, and that is $32,100. Now, in many of these situations, I need to say there are women who have lower positions. So that is not factored in, actually. But these are all, as Brad said, these are all people who work 8 hours a day all year round. They're not seasonal or anything. So one of the issues for Hispanic women, for example, is that they often don't have the same education and they are probably taking lower paying jobs. However, there are many, many examples of women holding exactly the same jobs as men, the same ranks in the company, and being paid less.
That was helpful. You wanted to add something, Linda.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that one of the reasons for this is because Equal Pay Day goes all the way back to the late 1970s, is the original idea in the United States that men were the primary wage earners, and that if women were working, it was to supplement their family income.
Right, gave an additional income.
Right, and at that time, many men had what we now call living wage jobs, and families were more likely than they are today to be able to subsist on a single income. But women now, there's almost 70% of women are in the workforce, and they comprise almost half of the total workers. And a good chunk of those are families that the women are the household earners, and be unmarried women, and a lot of them are mothers. So if that situation was ever completely true, that only one wage earner was needed, it's certainly not true today. So
exactly.
We have two wage earners and one of them isn't earning to capacity, then the entire family is set back. And so it isn't just a women's issue. It's a family issue.
Yes, absolutely.
It's a national economic issue.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, yeah. I would also like to add that the pandemic has caused.
I was going to ask you about that.
It's just horrendous because there are many women that had to stop working because they needed to work in person in their workplace, but they had children who were not going to school, young children. And even now that the schools are beginning to open, they still do not have any buses taking children to school. And so that presents a different problem from others who may have children of different ages and different levels of schools. And they end up having to chauffeur them around at different times. And that, again, can be an issue for their workplace.
Absolutely. One of the statistics that I was reading out of the data was that when we talk about healthcare workers, for example, you look at who comprises the healthcare workforce, and the majority of the workforce is women. 73% of the workforce for healthcare is women in technical or healthcare practitioner positions. They even make up a larger proportionate share of essential healthcare workers. It's 86% of the essential healthcare workers that were asked to stay and continue working during all of this. So, you know, during the pandemic, they were also some of the people that were most at risk for COVID, for getting sick, for having continuing problems with COVID if they did survive it, or also dying of COVID. So we've got things that are upside down. And yet, if you just look at the top of the nursing scales, the male nurses earned higher than female nurses, with male nurses earning $73,600 compared to an average female nurse of $68,500. So there's something wrong in that. You know, what do you attribute those things to? Some of those are really old, they're historical, right? Because you were saying that it comes from that breadwinner theory, the male income is the household income of the 70s, of the 50s, of the 60s, and yet we're not comprised like that anymore. We don't look like that family as often anymore. What, Lynn, do you see that there are legislations and things that are changing to reflect more what we look like today?
Yes, one of the pieces of legislation that is very important to help close this pay gap is the Paycheck Fairness Act, which was passed in 2020 in the House, mm-hmm. and it is now, as of last week, back in the House, and they are holding hearings in the Education and Labor Committee and getting ready to pass it. And we hope that it passes the Senate and becomes law. The last time that we had an Equal Pay Act pass was in 1963. And at that time, it did help close the gap. But since then, it has really stalled, and that was a long time ago, and we're still in this pay gap between men and women. So the Paycheck Fairness Act will give women the tools that they need to successfully challenge pay discrimination, and it will also provide incentives for the employers to comply with the law. And they've managed to come up with ways to get around the original law. And some of the elements in the Paycheck Fairness Act that would really benefit women, one of the key provisions is prohibiting the use of salary history. And that's important because although some of the elements in the Paycheck Fairness Act have already been passed in states across the United States, but it's not consistent. And as we're a more mobile society and people cross state lines to get a job, if they move to a state that doesn't have this law in place, where they cannot use your previous salary to base your new salary on with the new company, it just perpetuates the wage gap. So this, in the Paycheck Fairness Act, prohibiting the use of salary history is very important because then your pay gap will not follow you from job to job, because it would be illegal for them to base your new salary on your previous salary history.
So Lynn, so to explain that, if someone was working in a position with a company and they applied for another position with another company and it wasn't the same position, but the salary was lower because it was a different position, they could still base the new salary on the position that they held before?
Currently, they could.
Even though they were doing different work?
Yes. Your previous work history and what you were being paid, even if you're going for a different job, they could use that. And basically, that says that they value men and women differently. So this is a very important provision in the Paycheck Fairness Act. Another important element is guaranteeing non-retaliation for wage disclosure. In the past, companies could ban employees from talking about their wages and sharing that information. So it was very hard to find out if you were being paid less than your equivalent male colleague. So this guarantees that it's illegal to prohibit employees from disclosing wages or discussing their wages, while also protecting confidential wage information. So it's you can't go in and look at other employees, but you can discuss it among yourselves, and that's how they would find out. And then you could fight that discrimination or bring it to the employers.
Now, some states already have that implemented. You're talking yes. about now it becomes a federal law so right. that all states have to, right. because in California, that's already been passed.
Yes, and so is the prohibiting use of the salary history.
Yeah.
That's also on the books in California. We're fortunate
right.
that we have a lot of these provisions already on our labor laws.
Mm-hmm.
But this would make it universal across the United States, which is very important because people are moving across the country.
Right.
And one more important that I think applies to people that are working in small businesses that are franchised, and that's clarifying comparable establishments. And this would eliminate an artificial geographic limit, allowing a woman to reasonably compare her salary to male colleagues with the same employer, so long as the facilities are in similar geographic regions. Right now, the law says they have to be in the same establishment. So you can imagine, for instance, something like Starbucks or, some of the smaller franchise businesses, that have several stores in the community, they may only have one manager. Mm-hmm. And one may have a female manager and the other a male. Currently, you couldn't compare your salary with the male salary because you're not in the same establishment.
Sure.
So this would really benefit those workers that they could compare and say, you know, I'm doing the same job. I deserve the same pay.
Yeah.
Those are just some of the really, and there's equalizing remedies that when you do present a lawsuit or fight the pay discrimination, that you would receive the same compensation when you win the lawsuit that's now available to discrimination based on race and ethnicity. It's not for wage discrimination currently. So those are just some of the actions, and it's really important. And I would encourage all of your listeners to write to your congressmen and senators and urge them to sign on to this Paycheck Fairness Act and vote for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And Susan, I'm going to come back to you in just a moment. I'm Chris Kingdom Barker with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. My guests today are three local American Association of University Women representatives. They are Linda Baker, president of the AAUW Atascadero, Lynn Janeway, President AAUW San Luis Obispo, and Susan Opava, past president of the Five Cities Pismo Beach AAUW. If you have a question for any of today's guests or comments or an example of an unequal pay practice you may have encountered or perhaps interceded on, you can call us at 805-549-8855 or email us at voices@kcbx.org. And Susan, I'm going to go back to you.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to follow up on something that Lynn said, and she pointed out that the wage gap is really devaluing women. And I think it's extremely important that women recognize that, not try to hide it or brush it under the rug, but to really take it seriously, because it is voters who vote for elected officials. It is the population of the United States that has allowed this devaluing of women go on for decades and decades. Look how long it took the United States to get the vote for women. And this is just not acceptable, but it's also a problem of some societal issues. For example, religions. There are many religions that teach that men are superior to women, that spouses, females have to be subjugated essentially to their husbands. And when you elect officials, if you continue to vote for people who have those same ideas that women are less important than men and women need to be protected and all these very, very old-fashioned values, which sometimes are simply the way people have been raised, but it is just unacceptable, period. And I don't know how many of you know this, but there are about 20 to 25 developed nations in the world, many in Europe, who have had women leaders for a very long time. And how long did it take us to get a female vice president? Look at Angela Merkel in Germany, who has been leading the country for 16 years. And this is just, it means that the United States is very backward in the recognition of women and their strengths. And I think we have to be active about making this obvious to friends, neighbors, family members, representatives in Congress, whatever we can do.
Thank you for that. Linda, you wanted to say something.
Well, Lynn also touched on something that's important about this is that when she was talking about your salary history following you, once you've been underpaid for a while, it affects your ability, your economic security for every other stage of your life.
You know, right.
You also have fewer retirement savings. They have less capital if they want to start a business. It's part of their financial security and a critical part of it for the rest of their life. And this is why we are emphasizing so much that this has to change, because when women are paid well as or equally with men, I mean, that's half of the workforce. Just think about all the economic power that would bring to our national economy, all that extra money that is there, not just for the women and their families, but also consumers. Women are often the primary consumers in their families. So that's why this is an important issue that has broader implications for more than just women.
I think it's surprising for a number of people that your Social Security is based on your earned income.
Yes.
You know, when you get to the place that you're 64, 65 and you retire, the amount that you're going to take in on a monthly basis at 65 or 70 is going to be based on what you've earned during the course of the time that you worked. And if you're always underpaid, you know, it's not that, it's got major ramifications for what you have left to live on. And there's no possibility of going back and making that up. The further that we get into our lives and earn, into our earning ability as careers, the less time we have to make any difference in that. It's really, really important, to look at that.
Yeah, and I would add, too, to add to what Susan said, is that it's important that we hang together on this, you know, that we not only support each other in trying to make sure that everyone in the workplace is paid the same way, but that we also work with government agencies and we work with businesses to try to, it's actually to their benefit. Sometimes people are concerned, well, if I'm paying more, then I'm going to lose profits as a business, particularly a small business. But actually there's a lot of evidence that it reduces turnover, it makes for more productive employees. And if you look at the long-term arc of a business, they're actually better off. And then you don't have disgruntled employees who are going to be looking for something else better because you're not paying them the way that you should. And of course, there's always the possibility, if the laws pass, that you might actually face lawsuits for not complying with the fair practices of payment. I also wanted to pick up on something Susan said, that certain whole classes, and you, Chris, one of the reasons why that gap exists is that there's whole classes of fields of work that are mostly populated by women.
Right.
The caregiving, the teaching, the healthcare professions, and these are underpaid as an entire class of work. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the problem, too. And so legislation for hourly minimum wages and also the possibility of unionization, where people get together in the retail fields, which also have a lot of women, where people get together once a union starts negotiating with an industry or a business, they negotiate the same salary for everybody.
Right.
There are ways that we can attack this problem, but most of them involve collaborating with other organizations and government and working together as women to support each other.
Absolutely. Did you want to say something, Lynn?
I just wanted to add that when you were talking about how the pay gap follows you basically to the end of your career and into retirement, that it begins at the first job interview. And the statistics and the research has shown that even when you have two graduates coming to a male and a female coming to the same job interview, and they walk away with different salaries. And even though they do the same work and they're given bonuses and good reviews, it's all a percentage. So if you start out with a lower salary than your male counterpart, even though you get the same bonus, it's on percentage. And right. That's the way Social Security is. So you're never going to catch up.
Right.
And one of the things that we hope that women will take away from this is that when you are going out for your first interview to start your career, that you negotiate. Don't accept what they offer you. If you are in a position to negotiate and let them know that you're worth more, you will receive more. So that's an important factor that women don't often do. And they just accept it and figure, well, that's what I'm supposed to be paid. In other instances, when they're in the workforce, they're working really hard and they just think that their employer will notice what a hard worker they are and will automatically give them a raise.
Right.
And that's not true. You have to ask for it. And yeah. Women traditionally don't do that.
We're going to take a few minute break and go to Brad, and then we'll come back. And Susan, I want to go back over to you.
Right now or after?
Yeah, we'll take a break.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us on your Thursday afternoon. Ahead today, it's Latino USA at 2 p.m., followed by Fresh Air at 3, and Marketplace at 4 o'clock. You are listening to Central Coast Voices with your host, Chris Kington Barker, and you're invited to be part of today's conversation. We invite you to bring your comments or questions to today's guests. Call them to 805-549-8855, or you can email them to voices@kcbx.org. Back over to you, Chris.
Okay, thank you. And I have Linda Baker, President, AAUW, Atascadero. Lynn Janeway, President, AAUW, San Luis Obispo. And Susan Opava, President, past President of the Five Cities and Pismo Beach, AAUW. And we were just talking offline for a few minutes, and all three of my guests wanted to share that, you know, when we're talking about how there are inequities, and we know there are inequities, there are also things that can be done about it. And Lynn was speaking to that. So I'm going to turn it back over to the three of you to talk about what kind of resources the AAUW have for individuals who really maybe don't feel comfortable or skilled at how do I step into this more.
One of the, I spoke a little bit about a program that is for college women and called Start Smart. And we did hold some of those workshops on Cal Poly campus a few years back. That program has since been taken over by the Career Center at Cal Poly. So I would urge any Cal Poly students listening to check in with your Career Center about salary negotiation workshops as you're venturing out to get your first job. The other one that is for all workers is WorkSmart that AAUW has developed. And right now, there are no in-person workshops going on because of the COVID, but you can go to aauw.org and find workshops that are being held virtually, scheduled around the country. There aren't too many, or free online. You can take the workshop, and it will help you if you're looking to change jobs, apply for a new job, how to negotiate your salary, or if you're staying with your company and looking to get a raise or promotion. So those are all skills that would empower women to increase their salaries and get the pay they deserve.
That's great. Yes, Susan.
So I just would like to add that there's another very important resource at AAUW.org, the national organization. They actually have a legal advocacy team that can support women who are already engaged in a gender equity legal case. So basically a lawsuit against their company for what they consider to be discrimination on the basis of gender. And they can provide resources for that. And at times they will also get involved in the actual legal case themselves. So I think that's very critical. It's a very important resource.
And one of the cases that actually brought the law to California prohibiting the use of salary histories was a case that AAUW helped, a case of Eileen Rizzo, who was discriminated against. She came from Arizona to increase her salary. She was in education, had a master's, and came to California, and then her salary was much less than her male counterparts, even though she was qualified to receive more. So she filed a suit, and AAW took it on, and we finally won. And as a result, California now has that law that prohibits the use of prior salary.
So can we talk a little bit about what you hear from women are some of the reasons for the tolerance that we have for the inequity? Because it happens, yes, it is employer driven, it is a culture, it is something that's been around for a long time, and yet we as women also promulgate this in some of our fears. Can we talk a little bit about what some of those fears are that kind of hold us into a place of not asking for a higher pay or accepting that we may have been taken into a job over a male because we've accepted a lesser income? Because I think there's the reality of that too. Yeah, Linda.
Well, I think sometimes people are afraid of retaliation, which is a similar fear to not reporting toxic work environments that are harder on women than they are on the men in the environment. They're concerned that if they're too outspoken and ask for too much, they may lose their job or just not get the promotions that might come to them because they're perceived as a troublemaker. Mm-hmm. And I think there's some deep-seated differences between how we see men and women, the difference between being assertive about what you need in the workplace workplace to be valued as a worker and in order to support your family and yourself, and that men are sort of allowed to be aggressive or assertive, whereas sometimes women are seen as being aggressive if they ask for the same thing, sometimes even in the same way.
How do you speak to the comments that, well, you know, women who are working in the workplace, they need a lot more allowances during their work if they've got children, if they have to go and pick them up from school, if they have to be accommodated with the hours, if they have to, you know, stay home more frequently. Their male counterparts don't have to do that. So, you know, yeah, they're paid less, but they have more flexibility in their time. Because I personally heard that one when I was working as a young mom. So it was like, yeah, but you get all of these other little perks. They didn't feel like perks. Did I stun you?
No, we're just thinking. No, we're just thinking, because these are bigger social issues. You know, pay is just one small representative of.
Yeah, Lynn.
I just wanted to add that there's something in the research. They talk about the mommy discrimination versus the mother discriminate and the father bonus. Mm-hmm. So in looking at statistics, they found that women who are mothers in the workplace often, even though they were working full time and they wanted this career, were often passed over for promotions or that special assignment because the employer, well, they're a mother, they're going to want to take off and spend time with family. Whereas the father got paid more because he had somebody at home taking care of all that. And so they felt it's a social bias, cultural bias, that he needed more money because now he had a family. So it's an odd calculation, but that's in the mix as well. So
yeah,
it's a complicated issue to try to combat on all these fronts.
We have, you know, what we're seeing now is with COVID, so many of the women that have had to exit the workforce, these are women that have just started their careers in many cases, some of them in professional careers, some just trying to get into those professional careers or trying to balance college and careers and children. And then having COVID with trying to now also learn how to be a home teacher at the same time and not inexplicably, right, not being able to balance all of those things. Go figure. And what do you see or what do you hear from women? What do you expect from that? Because I see that as potentially even more devastation for the average income of women. Many of these were higher income working women. I'm just throwing you loops, huh?
I don't. No, Susan, we're just trying to decide among us. You know, we're just trying to decide among us who should speak to it.
Oh, okay.
Susan wants to.
Yeah. So I just want to second everything that Chris said. If a woman decides to be aggressive in the workplace, or to ask for a raise, or to do anything like that, there definitely will be retaliation. Yeah. Obviously, depending on the company, there are good companies and there are bad companies, but I would say it's a huge risk. And I think that's why most women just go, okay, I have a job, I have an income, maybe I'm not going to get the raise that the guy next to me got, but I can't do it. I cannot risk losing my job. And that's a very, very big part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
There's one statistic about women in the workforce, and that when a woman left the workforce for 1 year, when they came back, they were 39% lower in income.
Wow.
1 year, they lost that much of being out of the workforce. So you can only imagine the impact from COVID and the numbers of women that have lost their jobs, had to leave the workforce. It's huge.
Yeah.
Impact on their future economic security for themselves and for their families.
As an organization, have you talked about that impact? Because as the cost of college education has gone through the roof,
yes,
you know, where we were already pre-COVID talking about whether or not people were going to be able to earn back what they had paid out in a college education in the lifetime of their careers, you know, and now you throw this in. Is that sustainable? Yes, Linda.
Well, it's all interconnected, as we've been suggesting, as Len said, it's a complicated problem, but it does require multiple approaches. So like one of them would be more universal childcare. It'd be improved family leave policies so that men and women can leave the workforce for about the same amount of time and be paid either by the state or by their employer. That would help. And AAUW at the national organization, which does a lot of advocacy work and lobbying, they support all of these kinds of associated laws that would help the overall situation so that women aren't penalized so much when they leave the workforce. And a positive thing I think that came out of COVID is that I think we've seen, I mean, in a lot of the social upheaval this year, we've seen come to the forefront things that have always been there that we haven't paid attention to, you know, and a wider group of people now realize that essential workers are essential.
Yeah.
And they understand, you know, they see their family income get cut in half because there was no childcare. And so the women had to go back, leave the workforce many times and or cut back considerably to part time so that they could care for their children. And I think a wider group of people are recognizing that this is an economic issue that everybody has an interest in trying to work at. So personally, I feel very optimistic that we have an opportunity here to work on this. Like with payday, every couple of years we inch forward. So, you know, a couple of years ago, equal pay day was at the end of April. Then it was the end of March. Now it's 1 week earlier in March. I mean, incrementally, we are working on these things. But if we don't see it as just a women's issue, and a group of people see we have to work on these things, then I think that it's doable. I think it's doable. It just has to be recognized as really critical to the well-being of our entire society.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a societal issue, not just a women's issue. It's a whole family issue. Susan?
So I just want to emphasize that the solution to this problem, in my opinion, is that the United States has always been very focused on itself. And Americans say all the time, we're the greatest country in the world. But when you look at world data, that doesn't pan out at all. And this past year, the United States was ranked 13th in the world on quality of life. And that involves a lot of statistics like, you know, infant deaths, healthcare. But we always go around saying we have the best healthcare in the world, and we don't have that either. So I think we need to stop doing what, you know, this is a term I would have used in the 60s, contemplating our navel, and look outward to these developed countries that have all those programs that we don't. They don't worry about pregnancy leave, maternity leave. They support it. They pay for it. They pay for it for the fathers as well. And it just goes on and on. We need to really stop considering ourselves the best and really, frankly, analyze what we need to improve at. And it should be a national issue, of the government, in fact. But voters have to support it as well. That's part of the problem.
And stay aware of it. Lynn, you had mentioned that the, you know, that this, that the Paycheck Fairness Act had gotten through Congress and now was back to Congress. What ended up happening with that?
It passed the U.S. House of Representatives, and then, of course, it stalled. It didn't go anywhere. And they're reviving it by holding hearings, I think, in the committee hearings in education and labor, in order to revive it and make sure that it comes to the forefront, especially now since the economy is in such bad shape because of COVID, and that this will be a real help to all of those workers that have lost their job and looking to get back into the economy. So then after it moves out of the House of Representatives, of course, it will go to the Senate. And we hope that they will pass it. But it takes all of us to contact our representatives. We are their constituents.
Yes.
And if they don't listen to us, we have the power to remove them and get somebody that will. So I would urge everyone to call your representatives, email them, tell them to sign on and pass the Paycheck Fairness Act.
Is there something that's available about this on the AAUW website with language that people can send to a congressman or to a senator about the impact it can have for essential workers, for women who are disproportionately in some cases being affected even as household heads?
Exactly. And yes, in AAUW, if you're a member, you can just sign up and be what they call a two-minute activist, and you put in your information, and they will send you alerts that this issue is coming up, and all you do is click a button, and they've written it up for you. You can alter it, put in your own personal experience, and send it off, and they have done the work for you. They buy your zip code, and they know who your representatives are in both the House and Senate. And it goes off, and I've done it numerous times, and you immediately get a response from your representative that they have received your email, and that it's automatic. They're just acknowledging that they received it. And then later, you'll get a personal note. So that's really simple. There are other, and I haven't used this, but I know there are other sites that will do the same thing. Mm-hmm. But AAUW is really easy to use. So any AAUW members out there, be sure to sign up as a two-minute activist. So,
yeah, Linda.
Well, since we're talking about membership, I wanted to mention that if you are interested in it, AAUW is open to women and men, and it isn't limited to people with four-year college degrees. Right now, the limitation is any kind of two-year program after high school But we're going to be voting in the spring to actually even probably get rid of that educational requirement. So we're just interested in women and men who have, we are interested in all women and men who have the same kind of policy agendas and concerns that we have. And those are all on our website.
Okay, and the website again is www.aauw.org, right?
Yes.
Right. And most people join at the branch that's closest to them. And so, as I said, there's five branches in our county. So there's one close to you.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. And there are classes that are available.
Yes. There are the Start Smart and Work Smart. And that's all on the aauw.org website.
Great.
And we each offer scholarships too. And right now is our scholarship application time.
Oh, perfect.
All enrollment. So each of our individual websites have links to our scholarship applications. And now is the time when we're all opening up those scholarship applications. Usually there's a period, we're all slightly different on our dates, but you open up now and then close sometime at the end of April or beginning of May, choose people for enrollment the following fall.
And these are for college students and high school students or college students?
We're all slightly different on what their requirements are.
But, okay.
And returning students as well.
Okay. Fantastic. I want to thank my guests today, Linda Baker, President AAUW Atascadero, Lynn Janeway, President AAUW San Luis Obispo, and Susan Apeva, President of Five Cities, Pismo Beach, AAUW. Next week, please join Fred Monroe as he speaks with guests from the Suicide Prevention Council about preventing suicide in San Luis Obispo County and what's being done about that. Central Coast Voices has been sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX and made possible through underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent. I'm Chris Kington Barker. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for tuning in to Central Coast Voices. This show will be available to listen to later today on our website, kcbx.org. And you can hear any of our local shows anytime and stream on demand from kcbx.org.